Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. And I'm so glad to have you along on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and we're rolling forward into quite a tumultuous week, I must say. Woke up this morning, I saw that we had an earthquake on the West Coast, we had a hurricane bearing down on the East, a commander-in-chief in the White House who may have killed two Navy SEALs, a Republican Party set to shove another liberal down the throats of conservative voters, and Tim Tebow trapped in purgatory somewhere in New Jersey. That's right. The Jets have figured out a way to play Tebow even less than they have been playing him. They're on a bye week. It's the only way he could possibly play less. So where can we turn to make sense of it all? Well, welcome to the show. That'll do that for you, ladies and gentlemen. Sit back, relax, and enjoy as we focus in on the week to come and take a look at the week that has passed. Actually, a little more than a week. I'm sorry I missed you last week. I was involved in the felling of a tree, which turns out to be quite more of an operation than one might imagine. It's not as easy as just yelling timber and letting it fall. Anyway, a good time was had by all. Where to start? Do I want to start with politics? Do I want to start with justice? Well, let's start with the important news of the day. From New York, the Associated Press, a Gallup survey, touted as the largest of its kind, estimates that 3.4% of American adults identify themselves as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. That's 3.4%, according to the Gallup survey. And, of course, that begs the question, then why are 80% of the house hunters on HGTV queer? Why is that, if only 3.4%?
It's 3.5% of the people running.
What's that now? Because, well, I don't know what the survey would look like if you surveyed the management of HGTV, affectionately known here as Homo and Gay TV. And, of course, if you took that survey at the CNN headquarters, well, you'd get quite a different number. But it is interesting to point out how such a small percentage of the population is having such an enormous impact on the culture and the news of the day. It is something to be amazed by, as a matter of fact, as we consider such a vocal minority literally taking control of the culture day by day. I know, call me paranoid, but I see it happening everywhere, pouring out of the closet like there's no tomorrow. And if we keep allowing this pouring to happen unabated, well, there may be no tomorrow, at least not a tomorrow that you and I will recognize. Speaking of a tomorrow that we may not recognize, let's go to the United Nations. This is from CNBC. CNBC reports that having failed last year to secure full UN membership due to U.S. opposition, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said last month he would ask the General Assembly to approve a less ambitious promotion of the Palestinian Authority's observer status to, quote, non-member state, unquote, not unlike the Vatican. Yes, the push, according to the Palestinians and well-placed sources at the UN-General Assembly, say that the push is likely to succeed. Mahmoud is consulting with unmember states and is expected to call for a meeting on the Philistine issue as early as next month after the November 6th U.S. presidential election. Is it already? We've got one more weekend until the election, the fateful election coming up. And so the Philistines are craftily going to wait until after the presidential election to be promoted to non-member state at the United Nations in their quest to eventually be recognized as a full-on state, disturbing, to say the least. Only because there never has been a Palestine. It's going to be a wholly made-up creation of the United Nations, unlike Israel, which has existed for 5,000 years, to one degree or another, in the land affectionately known by the left as Palestine. All right, so could be some trouble brewing there, but let's go to our military and talk about the trouble brewing there. Worry not, Americans. Should there be global conflict and crisis, our military is being prepared. Dateline Washington, this is from BuzzFeed. The new head of the country's leading LGBT military organization is Allison Robinson, a former commissioned officer in the Army who most recently worked at the Human Rights Campaign on workplace issues. Allison Robinson, I guess formerly Al Robinson, is transgender. Yes. Which I'm assuming from this that it was formerly Al and now it's Allison, although these stories can get a bit confusing. Robinson will take the helm at both the SLDN and OutServe, as these two homosexualist groups in our military complete their merger to become OutServe SLDN. And they're doing that this very week at their big board meeting down in Florida. What is SLDN? Let's see, I should have had this prepared before. I should know what these acronyms. The Service Members Legal Defense Network, founded back in 1993 to overturn Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. They're going to be merging with OutServe. It's kind of disgusting to think what that board meeting must be like. The merging of two homosexualist military. I don't even want to get into what that's going to look like. I mean, everybody gets upset about these large government agencies having these bacchanals in Las Vegas every year. Can you imagine what's going on at the SLDN OutServe merger? Yuck. Let's just move that aside. All right. Now more from the military file. This is from CNS News. CNS News is reporting that the number of suicides among U.S. Army active duty and reserve personnel in 2012 is higher than the total combined military fatalities from Afghanistan over that same time frame. Shocking, is it not? In 2012, there have been about 247 suicides among active and reserve Army personnel, and there have been about 222 combined military deaths from what the Army would classify as hostile causes. Yeah. Oh, in addition, 40 military fatalities were the result of what are called green-on-blue attacks. That's where our brothers in arms there in Afghanistan, once they're trained and armed, turn their weapons on the good guys. I wonder if the two are linked in any way. I'm sure that it's somewhere the problem with escalating suicides in the military, the crux of the problem lies somewhere between the green-on-blue attacks in Afghanistan and the rapid homosexualization of the military underway in full force every day that goes by. Army Lieutenant General Howard B. Bromberg, who's Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower and Personnel, says this. He says, quote, "I'm asking soldiers, family members, Department of the Army civilians, neighbors and friends to look out for each other and reach out and embrace those who may be struggling, recognizing the warning signs. Our actions can save lives." That's, wants you to look out for the warning signs. Okay. A hopeless war, a hopeless, endless war. The destruction of the military tradition. These are the warning signs I've noticed. And I know that there are personal stories behind every suicide. But this is the fruit of the tree that has been pruned by the leftist progressive Marxists that now are in charge of the military. Leon Panetta, is he still Secretary of Defense? He was in the CIA and then he switched He switched with, who's that general nobody's heard from since Benghazi? Petraeus. What happened to Petraeus? I thought Petraeus was in charge of the CIA. And weren't the two SEALs who went to help our fellow Americans who were under fire in Benghazi, weren't they CIA operatives? Surprised that we haven't heard a bit more from General Petraeus. But we'll have to look at the week to come, because perhaps we will hear from General Petraeus as to what exactly happened there in Benghazi. I have a theory, but it might be a little too weird, wild, and wacky for anyone. Here's what I'm thinking, ladies and gentlemen, about this Benghazi assault, this attack, this successful military attack by our enemies upon American soil, killing American citizens, including an ambassador and a couple of CIA operatives and another State Department employee. Everybody's wondering how it could be that calls for help could have gone out from our personnel there on the ground. And politicians at the highest echelons in Washington, D.C., how is it they did not dispatch some sort of help in the form of a quick reaction force or a Marine platoon? They could have sent anyone. The battle raged for hour after hour after hour. Calls for help came hour after hour, and no one was sent, and the ambassador died. The only thing that I think that the crux of the issue lies somewhere between two theories that I've been developing. My first theory is that people like Barry Ho and Leon Panetta and other officials at the highest reaches of power in Washington were getting drunk, getting high, and having sex at the time, and they just weren't paying attention. I think there was plenty of that going on. But also, I think it's possible that Barry and his crew there at the White House, they really thought things were just going according to plan, that this was some kind of setup, that we had been dealing with these Islamist militias. We knew them. And everyone knows that Barry certainly needs an October surprise, because he's collapsing in a Carter-esque fashion that is astonishing to watch. And perhaps a hostage situation there in the Middle East, and a Barry Ho coming in at the last minute to save the ambassador, release our people, secure the area. Perhaps that was all in the works. Perhaps Barry thought he had a deal with the Islamist militia that launched the attack on the Benghazi outpost. And perhaps the Islamists just got a little bit carried away. They didn't mean to kill the ambassador. He apparently died of smoke inhalation in the safe house there. And perhaps things just got out of hand. And the reason Barry didn't dispatch anyone to help, because as far as he could tell on the live video feed, everything was going according to plan. I know, it's too crazy. I simply cannot comprehend in my own mind how it is that military officials in the area themselves didn't go and help. And the only thing I can imagine is that they were told not to by the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense. And I can think of no other rational reason that they would not help. So I know, I'm getting into black helicopter territory. I need to put on a tinfoil helmet. I don't know. It's just all so bizarre, ladies and gentlemen. It defies logical reasoning. And so when things happen that defy logical reasoning, logical people tend to, they tend to start putting together theories to try to explain something that doesn't make any sense. And in the end, perhaps our theories don't make any sense. And maybe we won't know for 50 years what happened. At the rate things are going, I think that's probably the case. And a sad statement it is on the state of things in America. But don't discount. I know it's a setup. It could be a setup. Barry Ho had a plan. He was going to work with the militia. But don't discount the fact that members of the government at the highest reaches of power were getting drunk, getting high, and having sex at the time and simply weren't paying attention. Yeah. Okay. So let's move from criticizing the government to criticizing higher education, a much less controversial. Well, I don't know, actually. Let's go to campusreform.org. They have a report out of UNC. UNC is the UNC, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. They've removed the word freshman from their official university documents, citing as their reason an attempt to adopt more gender-inclusive language. School officials say, "We are committed to providing an inclusive and welcoming environment for all members of our community. Consistent with that commitment, gender-inclusive terms. Instead of chairman, you'll just be called a chair. Instead of freshman, you'll be called a first-year student. Instead of an upperclassman, you'll be called an upper-level student, etc. These terms should be used on university documents, websites, and policies." A spokesperson for UNC declined to further elaborate on the university's reasoning because he or she or it was busy getting drunk, getting high, and having sex and didn't have time to elaborate. Brandon Hartness, who's the executive vice chair of the school's College Republicans, who's a boy, by the way, he said, "Girls are not going to deem the word freshman sexist. I feel like they're making a big deal out of nothing. I feel most people won't even think about it. They don't even think about such things," said the chair. But what this young Republican boy doesn't realize is that sex is all the faculty thinks about. That's all that's on their mind all the time. And it's a sign of the times, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we homeschool our kids, so I was reviewing curriculum for our 11-year-old. And I read a book, a biography on Isaac Newton. And I noticed, first of all, that there were no references in the bibliography older than 1993. And that struck me as odd, because you're talking about a guy who did the bulk of his work some 300 years ago. And there's no references earlier than 1993? Please, in a biography? And toward the end of the book, they ask the question, was Isaac Newton a homosexual? They had to ask that question. And, well, that book went in the trash. It's not going to make my daughter's curriculum. And just another sign of the times, ladies and gentlemen, that the education establishment is now joined with officials at the highest reaches of our government in a sex-obsessed orgy of ignorance and immorality. Feel like I'm frightened. It's dragging me. My head's about to break. Insanity inside of me. It's like I'm wild. Feel like do you think I'm making it up? Do you think I'm overreacting? Do you think I'm crazy? Well, I'm going to get to this story about the Democrats and the current election. But before I do, I just want you to imagine that we've come to a place where our government is going to hold courtroom trials for Guantanamo Bay detainees. At the same time, they're going to forcibly shave Nidal Hassan, the terrorist who shot and killed 14 fellow army soldiers. We're going to forcibly shave him before dragging him into court. How ridiculous have things become? How could a culture that has any sense forcibly shave Nidal Hassan and give terrorist combatants their day in court unless they're obviously obsessed with other things? Okay? I'll let you draw your conclusion as to what those other things are. But let's get to the political race. A report from Politico. The headline is, Democrats go all in for abortion rights. Yes, and if you've been watching the commercials over these past weeks, you'll know that that headline is absolutely true. The Democrats have gone all in for abortion rights. Politico says the evidence is impossible to miss. Commercials. The airwaves are choked with messages about women's reproductive health. Abortion rights advocates had prime speaking roles at the Democrat convention. Sandra Fluck, very prominent on the campaign trail. This year, according to Politico, this year's full-throated embrace of abortion rights marks a historic departure that now places the Democrat Party as firmly and unyieldingly in support of abortion rights as the GOP is in opposition. Well, I mean, I am a member of the GOP, and I appreciate Politico trying to give us credit for having full-throated embrace of the right to life, but I don't necessarily see that in my GOP. But I suppose if you're living in the world of Politico, anyone who would allow one baby to live is a radical pro-lifer. What else do they have here? Politico says, with the White House and the Senate hanging in the balance, President Obama and the Democrat Party have replaced political caution with a new political calculus, that it's the GOP that looks extreme and out of touch, particularly to women voters, who will help decide the election. I've got a quote here from Nancy Keenan, the president of NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League. NARAL Pro-Choice America, who, by the way, had a prime speaking role at the Democrat convention. She says, absolutely, there has been an embracing of pro-choice values to a degree we've never seen before. I've always felt that the issue of protecting a woman's right to kill her baby is a winning issue. Women care about it, and they will decide this election. Blood shooting out of her eyes. And then they have someone from the Susan B. Anthony list that only supports some abortions. And they only support some abortions over at Susan B. Anthony list. So they're radical pro-lifers. They support certain anti-abortion candidates who are against abortions in certain cases. They're pro-abortion with exceptions over at Susan B. Anthony list. They have a quote from Marjorie Dannenfelser. She says, the threshold that has been crossed by the Democrats is that every bit of energy has been placed behind this effort. Strategy, messaging, and tactics are all aligned with the full embrace of abortion rights. Dannenfelser says, it's a gift for us. It's 100% clarity on where they stand. Okay. Well, I have noticed it. I mean, you can't, if you're in Colorado, I mean, you really can't miss the pro-abortion ads. In fact, there's a new one running on the radio from Barack Obama himself. And I think if my crack staff, my extremely attractive audio engineer, has been on the ball, that we'll be able to run some tape for you of the new Barack Obama ad running in Colorado. Notice the emphasis on abortion rights. Ladies and gentlemen, strike that. Ladies, I'm Barack Obama, your president. The threat against the right to choose abortion is threatened like never before in this election. And calls for help are going up from coast to coast from women just like you who understand the threat and are demanding action. As your president, let me assure you, I've heard your cries for help and I will act. A special quick reaction force has already been formed. High-profile members include Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, my handsome wife, Michelle, Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood, have all undergone the necessary training and are standing by to be dispatched on a moment's notice, if necessary, to provide an abortion at your home should the Republicans take control of either the White House or the Congress. We stand prepared. I have undergone training myself. I am prepared to come to your home to provide abortion services should it become necessary. American women, ladies, do not worry. I have heard your cries for help. I am your president, and I will be there for you. I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message. You're the one who sets the bar. The hairdo king, the fashions are. You're fabulous.
I'm fabulous.
You're fabulous.
Oh, I'm fabulous.
You're the one we all can see. It's all about you.
Ah, yes.
It's all about me.
The beautiful people.
I'm fabulous.
He is fabulous.
You've got to give him that. I mean, him and Michelle. Fabulous and prepared, ladies, to help you. Should you need it. Okay. Probably the third worst Barack Obama impression in the history.
Third?
He's such an empty suit. He's a hard guy to do, okay? I mean, George Bush was hard to do, too, because he's an empty suit. And forget about Mitt Romney. If he becomes president, nobody can do that impression. There's just nothing there. There's nothing there. I don't know how we're going to survive no matter which way the election goes. It doesn't matter which progressive, pro-abort, pro-homosexual pagan wins. At least from a commentary perspective, we're in deep trouble. Things are going downhill. All right. Speaking of downhill, let's go to the justice file. This is from CNBC. This is from a little more than a week ago. As I said, I was involved in the felling of a tree, and I wasn't able to be with you last week. I was out there getting my hands dirty with the little people. It's quite exciting. From CNBC, though, serious news from the Justice File. This is from the Reuters Wire in New York. A U.S. appeals court in New York has ruled that a U.S. law defining marriage as a union between a man and a woman unconstitutionally denies federal benefits to lawfully married homosexuals. That's right. Another ruling against the Defense of Marriage Act. A three-judge panel found that homosexuals are entitled to heightened protection from the courts based on the history of discrimination the group has suffered. Well, you can imagine there's a history of discrimination because up until about 25 years ago, it was criminal. They were criminals, for crying out loud. Civilizations have been known to discriminate against criminals, so there is a history there. But now it's all been decriminalized, along with adultery and all other forms of immorality that we tolerate now on the downhill side of America here. One member of the panel, Judge Chester Straub, dissented, arguing that the federal definition of marriage should be left to the political process. That was the dissenter. That's the guy who made the right decision. That's the best we can come up with, that it should be left to the political process. Judge Straub, I think it is being left to the political process. And people like you aren't helping. The definition of marriage, the fact that we're arguing over the definition of marriage, to me, is a huge indicator that it's just about over for America. It's just about all over. We can't even figure out what marriage means. We're having doubts. We're having second guesses about what marriage is. Well, that's the sign of a culture that's about to disappear from the face of the earth. Or maybe not disappear, but just a long, slow, agonizing slide into irrelevancy, debauchery, disease, and everything else awful and horrible that you can possibly think of. But it's not just us, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, we're probably the most conservative bastion left on earth, if you can believe that. Because if we go across the pond the United Kingdom, indeed. A judge in the United Kingdom, according to WorldNet Daily, has ordered the owners of the Swiss Bed and Breakfast in Berkshire to pay nearly $6,000 to two homosexuals for hurting their feelings by not allowing them to occupy a double bed. Gosh, I feel like I need a shower after reading that statement. Anyway, Mike and Suzanne Wilkins, who own the Swiss Bed and Breakfast there in Berkshire, they say that they're just living their Christian values. And they say they live their Christian life not just on Sunday in church, but in every area of our lives, as Jesus expects us to. That's what they say. Pretty radical. Pretty radical for them to say that. I'm surprised that they've been allowed out of prison over there in the U.K., By the way, the inn, the Swiss bed and breakfast, it not only is it an inn, but it's also their private home. It's the private home of the Wilkinson family. And when two homosexuals sidled up and wanted a room together, they said, no, that's disgusting. Get out of here. Go to a bathhouse. For crying out loud, you're in England? You couldn't tell me you couldn't find a place where you could get a room, you perverts?
I think they picked that place on purpose.
You think they picked it on purpose? I think it's quite possible. You know, our enemies, our adversaries in the culture war, are quite aggressive, much more aggressive than we. I mean, we've got judges that the best they can come up with is, well, let's leave the definition of marriage to the political process. And we've got people over at the National Right to Life Committee and Susan B. Anthony list who refuse to recognize the inherent right to life of every innocent person, including an unborn child. They just want to hold the line. They want to reduce the number of children killed. But the homosexuals, they attack head on. They pick this in just so they could pick a fight. And that's why if we don't get on our horse, folks, they're going to win. Let's see here now. Wilkinson and her husband, back to Berkshire in the United Kingdom. Wilkinson and her husband say they have received hundreds of emails an hour and threatening phone calls and text messages because of their faith. Mike Wilkinson said one such message was hand-delivered and handwritten in capital letters, and it said, quote, I am coming to burn your house down, unquote. That's the shiny, happy people. We're coming to burn your house down. Over in England, they have an outfit called the Christian Institute, who is the defenders of folks like the Wilkinsons, normal people like you and I. Well, I hope you're normal. I know I am. The Christian Institute's Mike Judge said this. He said, quote, yes, Mrs. Wilkinson's B&B is a business, but it's also a family home. The law should be more flexible in allowing people to live according to their own values under their own roof. I believe a bit more balance is needed rather than allowing one set of rights to automatically suppress another. There's a bit more balance, you see, between the forces of darkness and the forces of light. All we're looking for is a bit more balance, you see. So that's the best they can hope for in England as well. Basically ceding the battle to the enemy and just hoping to hold our ground for a little while and maybe raise some money off these issues. I just don't understand it. I don't understand it. There's probably going to have to be some sort of catastrophic event that gets the attention of people. But more than likely, just a slow, dreadful, depressing slide. The slouch toward Gomorrah, as it was coined by Judge Bork. That's more than likely what we're in for. Now let's go to Texas, right? We hope there's some hope in Texas, right? The last free country left on earth. Got a story from CNN. A federal appeals court has refused to grant another hearing to Planned Parenthood, a decision that stops the organization's fight against Texas' effort to ban state funding for Planned Parenthood affiliates. That's right. Texas wants to stop funding Planned Parenthood at a state level. There's been an ongoing court battle, and now a federal appeals court has sided with Texas and said, yes, you have the right to defund Planned Parenthood. Well, Texas Governor Rick Perry applauded the decision, as you can well imagine, as every good Republican will do. He says, today's ruling affirms yet again that in Texas, the Women's Health Program has no obligation to fund Planned Parenthood and other organizations that perform or promote abortion. In Texas, we choose life, and we will immediately begin defunding all abortion facilities to honor and uphold that choice. Unquote. That's Governor Rick Perry of Texas. And you may ask yourself, what is the Texas Women's Health Program, Mr. Conservative right-wing governor there in Texas? Well, CNN clarifies for us. The Texas Women's Health Program provides about 130,000 low-income women with family planning exams, related health screenings, and contraception. So there you have it. In Texas, the last free country on earth, often often referred to and hoped for as the last bastion of real conservatism in America, has a government program designed to help poor women choke off their progeny through birth control. Family planning, they call it. Well, amongst the normal people in my circle of friends, we realize that any real conservative would be against the Texas Women's Health Program. Forget about funding Planned Parenthood and paying for abortions. That should go without saying. Should we be choking off the progeny of women just because they're poor? Just because maybe they're black or Hispanic and they don't make more than $25,000 a year? What's the solution, the conservative solution? Is it to issue them birth control pills and condoms? Is that the state of conservatism, ladies and gentlemen? Is that what we've come to? I laugh only to stop myself from tearing out my own hair and going insane. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So good to have you along. I'm opening my Bible right now because I need to get a verse reference. Again, I know I should have been more prepared before I got on the air, but things come to me as I plow through the news of the day, as I'm looking for this Bible reference. Let's see here. How does this? Well, let's go to. I don't know what this news source is. So, you know, a lot of times I just save the website, and it's marinij.com/Roxkin Filter Green. I have no idea. Hopefully this is a reputable news source, ladies and gentlemen. A 90-year-old Green Bray man was shot in the head during an alleged robbery, and he has now been sued by the burglar who shot him. Yes. This is Green Bray, California. One Samuel Cutrafelli, who was shot during a burglary, claims that Jay Leon negligently shot him inside Leon's home. So Sam Cutrafelli broke into Jay Leon's home, and Jay Leon shot him. And now Cutrinelli is suing Jay Leon. And Jay Leon is 90 years old. Cutrafelli, according to the article, Cutrafelli shot Leon once in the face during the alleged burglary, and Leon returned fire, hitting Cutrafelli. So he shot a 90-year-old man in the face, and the 90-year-old man returned fire, and now the burglar is suing the 90-year-old. Am I on another planet? Surely this is not a reputable news source. I may have to double and triple check this. I simply can't believe this is true. Let's see here. The burglar's lawyer said that Cutrafelli... by the way, Cutrafelli is the burglar. He says the burglar is a methamphetamine user and that the incident was a drug deal gone sideways and that Leon shot him in the back while he was trying to flee. Well, I imagine Mr. Leon had a hard time figuring out what he was firing at since he had been shot in the face. So I would say that if he returned fire, no matter where he hit the guy, I think the shot in the face pretty much puts him in the clear. But apparently not. A lawsuit has been filed. I don't know what else to say about this. Let's just move on. I wanted to find out who is the judge who actually allowed this to be brought to court. Cutrafelli claims Leon caused him great bodily injury, financial damage, including the loss of the burglar's home and the dissolution of the burglar's marriage. All as a result of, all right, it's too outrageous and ridiculous to even ponder. All right, we'll have to double and triple. That story may have come from The Onion, which is like a gag newspaper. That I may be the victim of, a hoax, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not above that type of thing. It's happened to better men than I. All right. But now let's go to the justice file from Fox News, who, well, let's hope they double and triple check this, from Starkey, Florida. A federal appeals court has blocked the scheduled execution of a mass killer convicted of slaying 8 people, a slaying that jolted South Florida way back in the 1970s. The U.S. Supreme Court has upheld the stay of execution. The appeal claims that 64-year-old John Errol Ferguson suffers from mental illness so severe that he cannot be executed. Yeah, they say he's too crazy to be executed. Why? Well, according to the article from Fox News, he's been on death row for 34 years. Now, if that doesn't drive him crazy, I can tell you it's driving me mad. 34 years on death row. Ferguson was convicted of shooting 8 bound and blindfolded people, execution style, in South Florida back in 1977, then killing a teenage couple months later in 1978 after they left a church event. His lawyers have argued that Ferguson lacks rational understanding because he suffers from delusions that he is the Prince of God and that God is preparing him to return to earth after his execution to save the United States from a communist plot. I would test his theory, absolutely. I don't understand what the hesitation is here. Maybe he's not, maybe he's completely sane. One way to find out would be to dispatch him to God and then let God judge. Because this guy's already been convicted here on earth. There's no doubt that he committed these murders in 1977 and 1978. This guy should have never outlived disco. And yet here he is with a stay of execution. A tragedy. How many of the people involved, how many of the victims, families involved in the crime are even still alive to see justice done? Surely we've lost our minds, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, and I talked about this on Denver Radio on Bob Enyart's show last week. The fact that we've lost as a collective people in the West in general, not just in the United States, we've lost the confidence of our convictions. We've lost the confidence to judge. Because we've abandoned so many fundamental principles that hold a civilization together that we're simply unable to execute justice any longer. And it's sad to watch happen, but I'm not letting it happen in my household. Don't let it happen in your household. And don't let it happen in your circle of friends. That way, when it all comes down, man, at least there'll be some Christians around to bail these sorry heathens out of the disaster that they've gotten themselves into. Let's try to be prepared, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Now, let's go to Washington from the Domestic Tranquility file. According to Fox News, violent crimes unexpectedly jumped 18% last year. Unexpectedly? Why would it be unexpected? It's not unexpected to me. What's shocking to me is that the government has been allowed to act like crime is declining for the past 20 years. Anyway, but violent crimes jumped 18% last year, the first rise in nearly 20 years. And property crimes rose for the first time in a decade. But academic experts said that new government data falls short of signaling a reversal of the long decline in crime. I'm sorry. I don't know where I was during this long decline in crime. I must have been... I'm either in an alternate universe now or I have been for about 2 decades. Back to Fox News. The Statistics Bureau said the percentage increase last year were so large primarily because the 2011 crime totals were compared to the historically low levels of crime in 2010. You remember 2010, ladies and gentlemen. We were just awash in peace and love and goodness. I don't recall that, but perhaps. Anyway, they go into the number 65%, 16.8 million, five. Who can understand all these numbers? All I know is I watch the news every day and I read the news every day, and I have not noticed a decline in either violent crime or property crime or any kind of crime. We seem to be awash in bloodshed and thievery, if you ask me. Chris Meld, an assistant professor at Michigan State University School of Criminal Justice, said this. He says, quote, "You can have percentage changes that seem quite large, but unless you put them in the longer-term perspective, you can sometimes misinterpret the overall seriousness of the problem." Yeah. You know, tell that to the people here in Metro Denver, where we have literally had a bloodbath in the last month. A bloodbath. Every night. Five people killed in a bar here. A murder-suicide over here. A 10-year-old girl butchered and dismembered by it looks like a kid in her own neighborhood. A bloodbath we've had. But we don't want to misinterpret the overall seriousness of the problem. Things are actually going okay. Oh, by the way, one other little stat. Historically, less than half of all crimes, including violent crimes, are reported to police. So take whatever stats that they're giving you and just double them, approximately. And that's actually where your neighborhood stands. Thank you for tuning in this week. My neighborhood. I want to talk about my neighborhood. We're all familiar with the story, the murder of little Jessica Ridgway, 10-year-old girl, on her way to school up in Westminster, Colorado. This whole thing happened within a mile or two of my old neighborhood. I still own a property there and lived in that neighborhood for 5 years. We're all familiar with the story. I have a quote from a parent at Jessica's school, Keith Burke. He says, "Everybody's very scared. There's a predator that lives by somewhere. We don't know where, and until we do, everybody's going to be on edge." This was from about 10 days ago, before they arrested the young man. Everybody's scared. And the arrest of this young man, does that help? I think it helps in the immediate vicinity. But I myself, in my heart of hearts, have felt a certain trepidation over the past weeks about just letting my kids play outside, about letting them go down to the park with other friends, about just letting them ride their bike around the block. And so I don't know. I just don't. I don't feel like a free American anymore. I feel like I'm living in something of a prison. Or at least a little less free than I was, and it's happening day by day. It's a cumulative effect of the bloodshed and the murder and the violence that, for whatever reason, we have decided to tolerate as a culture. We've decided to tolerate this level of violence, and we're all paying the price in that we're no longer free. And I'm asking, what is going to be the event that causes parents to stand up and say no more? We simply cannot tolerate this anymore. We cannot tolerate the pornography and the crime that the government and the lawyers have told us that we have to tolerate in order to be free, because we don't feel free anymore. And in fact, we're angry now. All I hear in the Jessica Ridgway case is mourning and sadness, and there's a place for that. But where is the outrage? Where is the anger? What is it going to take, ladies and gentlemen, for us, the Christians, the normal people, the only people who have access to the answers because we have access to the oracles of the living God, and we can tell these ignorant heathens why this is happening, and we can put a stop to it. At least we can help them put a stop to it. I don't understand. I don't understand. All right, so I should move on to less disturbing, personally disturbing news. Okay, so we can go to the science, really, file. This headline caught my eye, as I'm sure it did yours, from the Daily Mail in London. The headline says, pioneering British firm produces petrol from air. Yes, I saw that headline. I'm like, wow, they're producing gasoline from the air. That sounds pretty impressive. I want to find out what's going on. So let's look into it. A fuel synthesis, I'm sorry, the company is Air Fuel Synthesis in Stockton-on-Tees, Teesside, in the United Kingdom, claims to have made 5 liters of gasoline since August using a small refinery that synthesizes the fuel from carbon dioxide and water vapor in the air. Wow, it's like Jetson stuff, right? This is really cool. Experts have hailed the incredible breakthrough as a potential game changer in the battle against climate change and a solution to the globe's escalating energy crisis. Yeah, the technology, listen to this now. This is where it gets interesting. This is where the really part starts to creep in. The technology involves mixing air with sodium hydroxide, then electrolyzing the resultant sodium carbonate to release pure carbon dioxide. This is then reacted with hydrogen electrolyzed from water to make a hydrocarbon mixture, with the reaction conditions vary depending on the type of fuel desired. Now, while the company is still developing their process and still needs to take electricity from the electric grid, it believes it will eventually be possible to power the synthesis entirely from renewable sources. Yeah, okay. So this is where you're like, science? Really? Peter Harrison, the company's chief executive and fundraiser, I'm sure, revealed the breakthrough at a conference at the Institute of Mechanical Engineers in London this past week. He says, we're converting renewable electricity into a more versatile, usable, and storable form of energy, namely liquid transport fuels. Yeah, he says, by the end of 2014, provided we can get the funding, we need the funding, we can be producing gasoline using renewable energy and doing it on a commercial basis. Now, as he's writing his grant letters, Institution of Mechanical Engineers, Tim Fox, the institution's head of energy and the environment, he says this, quote, it sounds too good to be true, but it is true. Of course, if we can get the funds raised and all that. So, yeah. I'm not buying this in any way. I'm sorry. We've also got a perpetual motion machine down in the basement. And if we could get our funds secured for that, we believe by 2016, we could power the entire universe with one gerbil in a wheel. But of course, we need to get our funding lined up. So all we lack is a bit of funding. All right. So people look at these scientists as if they're gods, because we've been trained since... If you went to public school like I did, you were trained from the earliest age that it is science that has replaced theology. There's no need for God because we have science. And scientists are the new high priests to our children. Well, listen to this story out of Italy from Reuters. Scientists reacted with alarm to the manslaughter conviction of 6 earthquake experts in Italy for failing to give adequate warning of the 2009 earthquake in the city of L'Aquila that killed 308 people. Scientists are warning that researchers in areas involving unpredictable natural threats like volcanology and even meteorology will now be more reluctant to offer advice and insight to the public. So the scientists are upset that the governing officials there in Italy have charged them with a crime for not getting their science absolutely correct and warning everybody about the earthquake. Well, I just want to say to you scientists, you know, you have achieved your desire to be the high priests of humanism. You're the experts. You're the gods in the minds of the increasingly ignorant and superstitious masses. So when you become the high priest and things go wrong, well, you're going to be held to account. And I disagree, by the way, that any scientist should be convicted for not predicting an earthquake. I disagree with it, but I do find it ironic, and I feel like the scientific community is finally getting a bit of comeuppance for their high-handed arrogance in asserting that they have replaced God and that there's no need for God because we have scientists. Well, you know, if you want to ascend to the heights, you better be prepared when your ignorant, superstitious followers decide to chop off your head. See, that's one of the advantages of actually being God, is that he doesn't have to worry about getting things wrong and having the people charge up his mountain with pitchforks and torches and dragging him to the guillotine. And it's not just because he's God and he's powerful. It's because he's actually right about everything. And we need to teach our children to look to the living God as the source of all knowledge and all wisdom. And to teach our children to understand that the scientific method is based in the Christian worldview. Yes, there, I said it. It's radical, but I said it. It's not as crazy as my theory about Benghazi, but it's pretty radical. What do we have here? A quote from Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad predicted the impending downfall of the U.S. empire, blaming the collapse on a combination of the country's massive debt, its loss of legitimacy within the international community. Iran's official news agency reported that Mahmoud says, "How long can a government with a $16 trillion foreign debt remain a world power? The Americans have injected their paper wealth into the world economy, and today the aftermath and negative effects of their pseudo-wealth have plagued them." And he goes on for quite some time. But you're wrong, Mahmoud. It's not our debt, and it's not our loss of legitimacy. In a political sense, that is the reason that America is on the verge of collapse. It's the legalization of murder, sodomy, adultery, and theft. These are the reasons, Mahmoud. But I wouldn't expect you to understand all that. Okay, we're getting down to the end here. I hear the music. CNN is reporting that shortly after Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney enjoyed cookies and soft drinks with Reverend Billy Graham and his son Franklin, at the Elder Graham's mountaintop retreat, a reference to Mormonism as a cult was scrubbed from the website of the Billy Graham Evangelical Association. And I've been warning my friends this week. I've been arguing with people on Facebook about voting for Mitt Romney. They say, "Well, we've got to do the best with what we've been given, and we've been given this choice between Romney and who's the other guy? Obama. Yeah, we've got to go for Romney, even though we understand that he's not good." Some of them have admitted that they know he's bad, but they've got to vote for him because Obama is so scary. Let me just remind you of 2 Corinthians 6:14. Do not be... Warning, Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you like to censor anyone who would ever dare even consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. This warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? Well, there. That's for all my friends who are about to vote for Mitt Romney because they think he's the lesser of two evils. Just don't do it. You'll never forgive yourself. All right, finally, Minnesota Vikings punter Chris Cluey agreed to pose in the current issue of Out magazine. Yes, he's now advocating what he calls marriage equality, which is homosexual marriage. And then he has some quotes on here, and Cluey says that he is not gay. He says, "I will defend to the death your right to say or do whatever you want. as long as it does not oppress other people, he said to CNN. So this is where we are, ladies and gentlemen. Tim Tebow languishes in purgatory. Languishes somewhere between New Jersey and Manhattan. At the rim of hell. And meanwhile, the likes of Chris Clouy, a punter, steps up as the face of the NFL to defile the NFL in front of God and everybody, coming out as an advocate for homosexual marriage. I want to flee the country, but I'm afraid there's nowhere to go. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to stand and fight here. And come back next week, and we'll do this all again, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at kgov.com, at Theology Online, at American Right to Life. And of course, as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.